Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco-based Pacific Gas and Electric Company announced today that it plans to file for bankruptcy, and the news comes as the company faces tens of billions of dollars in liabilities for its possible role in starting California wildfires. PG&E said that electric or natural gas service will not be affected and that employees will continue to get pay and health care benefits, and the company will file for bankruptcy protection around January 29th. But it made the announcement today in order to provide 15-day notice to employees to comply with California law. PG&E also said yesterday that its chief executive, Geisha Williams, was leaving. The utility has said previously it could face significant liability if its equipment was found to have caused the campfire, the deadliest and most destructive blaze in the state history, which killed at least 86 people. Joining us to talk about the bankruptcy news, Marisa Lagos, politics and government reporter for KQED. Welcome, Marisa.
Thanks, Michael.
We're also going to welcome Mark Chediak. He's energy reporter for Bloomberg News. Mark, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks again for having me on the show.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Loretta Lynch back with us, former president of the California Public Utilities Commission, a role she held in 2001 when PG&E last filed for bankruptcy. Loretta, good to see you.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. And let me welcome all of you and, of course, welcome our listeners who are joining us for the second segment of our opening hour. And Marisa, let's begin with you. Before we talk about the management shakeup and the resignation of Geisha Williams, let's talk about what led to this. I guess the key is liability, but it's also the fact that maybe PG&E realizes the cavalry of the state's not going to come in.
I mean, yeah, I think that this is a combination, a confluence of events. Clearly, the last 2 years of wildfires have been devastating to the state writ large and specifically to PG&E. I mean, I think it's important to note, though, that we still don't know officially what caused the largest fire in 2017, the Tubbs Fire. Nobody has officially blamed PG&E for the campfire, although there's a lot of indications. This is the one in Paradise up in Butte County. And I think that over the last year, you know, even before the campfire, we saw a sort of drumbeat from PG&E warning state lawmakers and the governor that they needed more liability protection, that they wanted a change to state law. This whole inverse condemnation debate, which is basically a fancy way of saying whether they get held liable if they followed the rules and still cause something catastrophic like a fire. Although it's not clear to me at this point whether even if they had, if lawmakers had bought that argument and gone that far, that that could have prevented this. As these sort of questions over the fires have mounted, we've seen PG&E's stock plummet, their bonds, two of the three major credit agencies downgraded them to junk status last week.
Stock's down about almost 50%.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, it's kind of one of those things when you have a publicly traded company like this, in some ways it becomes a chicken or the egg. Like, we don't know for sure the liability figure. PG&E in this filing is pegging it of north of $30 billion if they're found liable for all these things. But when you wrap that up with what's happened in the markets, I think that they think at this point that this is their only way out.
Well, they also asked for a management shakeup, and they had three resignations from high-up vice presidents in electricity, and now Geisha Williams is leaving.
That's right. She's out. She's only been there since 2017. I think that, you know, the board, it sounds like, felt like this was a time for a new leader. And, you know, I think that she had been the one really trying to push from a sort of regulators and lawmakers to change the state law. You know, we did see some movement on that last year. I think it's important to note Senate Bill 901, which went through this wildfire committee, did allow them, at least for the 2017 fires, to issue bonds that ratepayers would pay back to pay for some of these costs. And it does seem like the campfire in some ways was, you know, a sort of a final blow. And again, I think that, you know, the week after that, we saw the markets just go nuts. And I think that that's really what has impacted a lot of, it seems, these decisions.
Now the investigations go on for their equipment being perhaps culpable, responsible in the potential liability back in the wine country fires of 2017, as well as the campfire. And let me go to you, if I may, on this. Mark Chediak, I just want to get a reading from you on what's happening with the market now and with the bonds overall. About 2/3 of their market value has been wiped out since the campfire.
Yeah, more than that now. The stock is trading down 50% today. It's close to trading what the stock was at when PG&E last filed for bankruptcy in 2001. So the capital markets have lost complete confidence in this company at this point. The bonds are now trading at all-time lows. As mentioned, that their credit rating has been downgraded to junk, which is actually quite remarkable for a regulated utility that's supposed to provide steady dividends and steady returns for investors. So this is really a phenomenal situation the utility's in.
What does this mean for retirees overall? I mean, they got portfolios and they're going to be affected, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've been doing a little reporting on that. My understanding is that pensions could be protected a bit in bankruptcy. It's going to depend on what the judge decides to do. However, obviously, if employees had some of their retirement in the company's stock, that has been the value of that has been almost largely wiped out.
And let me go to Loretta Lynch, who's here with us in studio, former president of the CPUC. This is a whole different world we're in here, Loretta. I mean, there was a filing back in 2001, but we're, you know, post all these fires. So we're in we're in a different cosmos and everything. I'm interested in finding out from you, though, what you think is going to happen in terms of the overall response to the, let's talk first of all about consumers. How is it going to affect consumers, if at all?
Well, it can affect consumers drastically and negatively unless the state acts now to protect consumers. It wasn't the state's choice. This was PG&E's choice to file for bankruptcy. But now that they have made their choice, the state now faces the challenge of protecting public safety first, then the ratepayers, then the victims, and also the workers. Remember, the workers, they're not working without pay, but this is a very uncertain time for them, and we need to frankly, thank the PG&E workers for doing the hard and heavy work that they do in this time of uncertainty.
Legislators are talking about a new plan, but how does that include, let's say, the fire victims, or how could it include the fire victims?
Well, so now that PG&E has chosen bankruptcy, and remember, we have seen this movie before in the energy crisis. PG&E also chose bankruptcy rather than working with the state to work it out. Now that PG&E has chosen bankruptcy, there are two entities that come front and center in terms of protecting California. The first is the PUC. For all practical purposes, there is no way PG&E can emerge from bankruptcy without the approval of the State Public Utilities Commission. And the reason is because the State Public Utilities Commission holds the key to your and my pocketbook. They're the ones who are going to determine how things are paid for. And obviously, the ratepayers are always on the hook when PG&E is at issue. So the PUC cannot act in violation of state law. So they cannot approve a bankruptcy reorganization plan that violates state law. I would urge the legislature and the governor to act soon to mandate that the PUC consider very specifically the ratepayers, the victims, the workers, and of course safety in any reorganization plan and not approve a bankruptcy bailout like the one that was approved last time.
County claims would also be in jeopardy here, wouldn't they?
I'm sorry?
County claims would also be in jeopardy.
All claims, right. Anybody who PG&E owes money to or is liable to, including all the tort claims, are now at risk in bankruptcy. And PG&E well knows that. Remember, they've had scores, legions of smart lawyers, financial analysts, and economists working on this deal for months, if not a year or longer. So we, the state of California, now I don't work for the state, but we Californians are way behind. So for the first thing we should do is just take a deep breath. This has happened before. The lights will stay on. Everyone will be paid. Service will be provided. Then we need to really take a look at what the costs are and how we protect the ratepayers and the victims and the workers.
All right, I'm going to take your advice and take a deep breath here. And as I do that, I'm also going to invite our listeners to join us. In fact, you can do that now. I know many of you have questions and concerns that you want to raise, so feel free to be part of the program. You can join us at our toll-free number. The number to call, 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement. Again, the number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website and post any questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Marisa, there's been murmurings about charges of murder. Where are we on that?
Hard to say. You know, I think that we have district attorneys in a handful of counties who have been referred these cases once CAL FIRE determines liability. And in many of those, about a dozen, they did refer these to prosecutors, saying in the 2017 fires that PG&E not only sparked them, but was sort of criminally culpable. Again, we don't know about the biggest of the last 2 years' fires, but we have heard rumblings from the state attorney general's office that they are examining this, which is interesting because that didn't happen in San Bruno. As you know, it was federal investigators who brought that case against PG&E after they killed eight people in 2010 in the Bay Area with that gas line explosion.
Like you're phrasing, they killed eight people. I mean, this is pretty much demonstrative, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in the campfire, we're talking, I think 86 is the number people. That is the deadliest and most destructive wildfire we've ever had in California. And, you know, and I think it's important to note how we got here. I mean, PG&E, I think Lourdes is right to say that, you know, what happened in the energy crisis was very different in a lot of ways than what's happening now. And, you know, to be fair, we have seen really remarkable changes in the environment very quickly. Right. We have seen these fires that maybe 10 years ago would have been a house or two, you know, explode. And there's a number of factors. But
and PG&E has been blaming climate change, as has Governor Brown, as has Governor Newsom.
Right. But I think it's also fair to say that if the fires didn't start in the first place, we wouldn't have these horrific results. And so I think that there's a question about whether to, you know, to Lourdes' point about how big of a company this is and how many resources they have, if they really took this seriously enough, quickly enough. And in the plans we've seen them lay out to regulators, you know, some of the things that they're proposing wouldn't happen for another 3-4 years. And so what happens in the coming years as we face what's basically a year-round fire season in California? You know, I think that there's a lot of really big questions about whether at the state level and within the company there was reaction quick enough.
Yeah, Loretta wants in here. Loretta Lynch.
Michael, we need to be very careful before we absolve PG&E of responsibility for these fires. They are not the only utility in California that faces fire-prone situations, and we are not the only state in the nation that has a dry, fire-prone area. But PG&E is the utility that has the most problems. Let's compare it to SDG&E. Think about San Diego. Same kinds of problems, much less fire damage. Why? SDG&E, a decade ago, woke up and started doing the right thing. They started turning off the power in high wind situations. They cleared their brush. They started undergrounding their lines. They have much less problem. So we should not blame climate change when, in fact, PG&E's lack of clearing the brush, lack of appropriate response in high wind situations, and failure to underground in the most vulnerable cities and towns and locations has really created the perfect storm of problems and now liability for this corporation that has refused to take responsibility as a corporation for the last 20 years.
Before we go to our listeners, let me go back to Mark Tediak, who again is energy reporter for Bloomberg News. There's certainly a good deal of talk about not only PG&E changing its management, but maybe changing a lot of its policies. What do you see here, Mark?
Yeah, well, the state regulator, the California Public Utilities Commission, has already called for an examination of the structure of PG&E. So they're going to look at things such as overhauling the board. We've already seen the CEO step down. The regulator wants to look at maybe if PG&E should be broken up into smaller utilities, or their gas and electric service business should be divided up, or even considering something such as a state takeover of the utility. So there's going to be a very, very close examination by the state of the future of this company, and I think the bankruptcy filing will only serve to complicate that in a certain way.
I want to go to our callers, but let me go to a tweet first and go to you on this, Loretta Lynch. Larry says, in 2001, PG&E's subsidiary filed for bankruptcy while its parent company and thus owners and shareholders took all the assets. What's to prevent this from happening again?
The political backbone of the Public Utilities Commission and the state of California. So last time, Larry's right. The state of California, through the PUC, in a case that I dissented on and appealed through the courts because it was such a bad bailout, what we did was we socialized the costs and we socialize the risks of PG&E, meaning we all paid for PG&E's costs and risks, while privatizing the profits and the gains. So I estimated at the time that PG&E was going to receive at least $8 billion in excess profits from their bankruptcy bailout last time. They've blown through that money, and they're coming back to the state and knocking on the door of the bankruptcy court for more. So the people who can prevent this are the Public Utilities Commission in not approving a bankruptcy bailout and only approving a reorganization plan that protects the ratepayers, the victims, and the workers. And also, the state of California writ large, the governor and the legislature could pass legislation to prevent the PUC from bailing out PG&E a second time.
Well, Governor Newsom's already put out a statement, not to that point, but certainly to the point that the state is monitoring this very carefully. And you wanted to add something, Marisa Lagos?
Yeah, just that, I've been thinking about this a lot in recent months, and I think that it's important to note that whatever happens with PG&E and the bankruptcy and the liability, the state and us as taxpayers and ratepayers has a bigger problem that we're going to have to tackle moving forward, which is that even if PG&E were able to sell their gas division and, you know, stay in the energy business, or if the state took over PG&E, the infrastructure itself is the problem here, right? In the sense that it's a huge service area. It seems clear that the sort of upkeep and tree trimming and forest management haven't always happened. And so I think that, you know, obviously today everybody's kind of in crisis mode trying to deal with this. But the bigger questions about sort of how to make a safe, reliable, and affordable electric system, I think are going to be things that no matter what happens with this individual company are going to be an issue.
A lot of calls here, but quickly, Loretta Lynch, if you could.
Well, I agree with Marisa that there are a lot of costs coming down the pike to basically rebuild the system that PG&E has failed to maintain adequately. But because there are only 100 cents in a dollar, we need to prioritize what our spending is. We need to put front and center safety and then reliability, and not be spending money on an undergrounding as part of safety and reliability, and not be spending money on seven-figure executive salaries, on billions of dollars for smart meters and other vanity projects that pad PG&E's bottom line, but that do not add to safety or reliability. You have to make choices if you want to keep California safe.
Well, I'm going to choose some calls here, and let me also say that we invited PG&E to join us this morning. They declined. Let me get a caller on, and that's our first caller, Ben. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious about what the prospects are for making essentially electricity generation in California public. I already know that in the South Bay, there's Silicon Valley Clean Energy, which is actually producing 100% clean energy and replacing PG&E in that part.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of comments on that. Here's Dave, who says, let's take this opportunity to change PG&E into a nonprofit entity owned by the state. We've seen previously in the San Bruno case of PG&E officials put profit margins ahead of maintenance costs, risking public safety. We now have a chance to turn it into a proper public utility that answers to its clients. I hope Governor Newsom takes this opportunity. Well, what are the chances of that, do you think, Marisa Lagos, particularly in light of the fact that, Los Angeles has a public power system, and so
maybe not the
as of Sacramento.
Yeah, LA may not be the example everybody wants to hold up as
but,
the best. But yeah, Sacramento, you know, I think SMUD is a good one. I mean, again, the challenge with that, and so, I mean, there's two things we're talking about here. In most cases, when we've seen sort of public power in California, it's actually been these community choice aggregation systems where the infrastructure is still owned by PG&E. It's the procurement of the power. So basically, a city like San Francisco can say, we want to buy, you know, this type of power, and it's coming through the same transmission line. So I think everything should be on the table probably, and those conversations need to happen. But again, the challenge of that infrastructure and the upgrades it seems to need and the sort of safety investment is not going to go away just because PG&E is not the one sort of, you know, holding it.
How much influence do they still have in Sacramento, particularly in light of their going Chapter 11 now and their CEO resigning? And
I think that's a really interesting question. It's changed for sure over the past year. I think that we're seeing a lot of anger among lawmakers. We've seen a lot stronger statements than maybe we did a year ago. So I don't think it's all roses for them up there, but they're also a very powerful corporation with ties to a lot of people. They're headquartered in San Francisco. New governor Gavin Newsom is the former mayor here. So that's something I'm going to be watching. I do feel like their star has fallen, for sure.
Let me bring another caller aboard, and that's you. Bill, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I live in Mountain View, and people down here are very enthusiastic about their community choice clean energy that went online middle of 2017. And my question is, in the chaos that this is has created, are there going to be headwinds, or are there going to be tailwinds for these community choice aggregators? A question to pose to your guests, please.
I mean, that's kind of what I was trying to get at, which
yeah,
is
I think
the infrastructure
that is what Marisa
is
was talking
challenge.
About before, talking about infrastructure and so forth. I'd like to go back, and thank you for that question, Bill, but let me go back to Mark Chediak, energy reporter for Bloomberg News. Mark, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the impact on the employees. What's the union saying?
Well, we don't have an official statement from the union yet, so that'll be interesting to see what they come out with. But my understanding is that the union wanted to avoid the situation at all cost, precisely because of the uncertainty that Loretta mentioned earlier regarding, cost cutting, potential workforce reductions, that sort of thing. Also, there is a situation with the workers' pensions that become vulnerable. It's unclear how vulnerable they will be in a filing, but in a bankruptcy filing, but they do become vulnerable. So it'll be very interesting to see what the unions say going forward, and they will definitely be very much a part of any sort of negotiated settlement with PG&E and all the other stakeholders in terms of an emergence from bankruptcy.
I want to bring more. Oh, Loretta Lynch, you want to say something? I'm sorry.
I do want to say that on the last caller about public power is not a new or a novel idea. Every state in the union has public utilities, meaning that they're actually owned by a government entity. And the state of Washington has over 50% of its power delivered publicly. And California.
And you remember how long this has been advocated. People like Bruce Brugman come to mind from the Bay Guardian.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's been a kind of people championing it for many years now.
And so my point is this. We can't socialize the costs and the risks and keep the gains and the profits private. If we're going to pay as Californians for PG&E's negligence and for PG&E's failure to maintain its system adequately, then the ratepayers and the victims and the workers are entitled to more than just handing PG&E another blank check.
Let's get Brad on next. Brad, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, so I wanted to make a statement about how the proceedings take place in which PG&E gets funding for example, vegetation management or natural gas leak surveys. And there are various stakeholders in these proceedings, and PG&E may come in and propose spending millions, but the other stakeholders, the ratepayer advocate, knocks it down, says it's too much for ratepayers to pay, and PG&E ends up spending less than maybe what they wanted to. And similarly for natural gas leak surveys, they want to spend more on advanced leak detection. And there's ratepayer advocates and other groups that say it's too much. So they're really sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And I think it's unfair to think that PG&E is acting unilaterally in all these situations and is entirely to blame. I think people need to look closer at the PUC.
Well, let's go to the PUC on this. And Loretta, we'll go to you, former president of the CPUC. Let's talk about its role here.
Well, the PUC has a key and critical role because the bankruptcy that PG&E cannot emerge from bankruptcy without the approval of the PUC, and the PUC cannot violate state law in giving its approval. So what state law is becomes key and critical, and who the people on the PUC are, and whether their first priority is safety, ratepayers, and victims, or whether their first priority is the company and the creditors, is going to make all the difference.
So the PUC be getting some blame for this?
Absolutely.
Along with PG&E?
Absolutely. To the last caller's point, the historical record shows that PG&E failed to spend the money that the PUC gave it. But absolutely, when I tried to hold PG&E accountable, they chose bankruptcy last time in order to evade state regulation. My concern here is that the PUC, as currently constituted, lacks the trust of the people. And I would suggest that Governor Newsom, just as he did with the DMV and sending in a strike force to clean up the DMV, should send in a strike force to clean up the PUC.
And we'll bring another caller aboard from Napa. Michael joins us. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I was just wondering why these large regulated utilities that provide such vital services are even allowed to be publicly traded. I mean, that implies that they have a responsibility to their shareholders when their real responsibility should be to public safety and to their ratepayers instead.
You're getting some assent here. Mark Chediak, you in agreement also with the caller, the spirit of what the caller is saying?
Well, I think the investor-owned utility model has been around for quite some time. The idea would, the concept behind it is that that it is an efficient way to deploy capital for investments in infrastructure. Now, there's a long-standing debate, obviously, over which model is produces a safer and more reliable system. And clearly, California is going to have that debate right now because you do have a an investor-owned utility that has gotten into serious financial trouble, not just not once, but twice. And the state will have to look at whether or not the investor-owned utility model for this company is the right model to deploy capital in the state.
And here's a question for you, Loretta Lynch from Randolph. It says, does former CPUC President Lynch recommend that California negotiate with PG&E as she did as CPUC president with Southern California Edison during the energy crisis to avoid a bankruptcy filing?
Well, it's a done deal. PG&E has made its choice. So what I would say, though, is there is another there is one key and critical difference between today and 18 years ago, and that is Judge William Alsup of the Northern District, the U.S. Federal District Court. Judge Alsup has continuing jurisdiction, meaning oversight, over PG&E's probation for its gas-related San Bruno felonies. So I would suggest that the state, and frankly, this would be completely up to Judge Alsup, think about withdrawing any reference to the bankruptcy court and instead take this bankruptcy case himself so that he can coordinate the bankruptcy and the oversight of PG&E's probation so that PG&E does not evade responsibility for its past felonies and so that the bankruptcy court does not only look to the creditors in the company. I think Judge Alsup has a greater frame of reference, and his most recent filings demonstrate that he thinks safety is the first priority. And so we are in a different situation because of Judge Alsup.
Shows how much can be based on who's sitting on the bench. I mean, it's a very good example of that. And getting a lot of comments from listeners about departing executive compensation packages. Apple writes, why not just take the CEO's bonus away to help pay damage?
There actually was a law passed last year that does limit executive compensation and bonuses. So we'll see how that plays out.
We will indeed, and see how the rest of this plays out. We will continue, obviously, to carefully monitor. Thank you, Marisa Lagos, and thank you, Mark Chediak, and thank you, Loretta Lynch. And another hour up ahead. Stay tuned for it. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.